Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she's Jill. Thank you for joining us for our second to last show of the year.
Yes.
Our Christmas show.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, happy Christmas. And happy Hanukkah.
Let me go through the stuff. I forgot about the stuff.
Okay.
Do me a solid. Check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2025 Best Buy picks, and you can listen to the podcast right there on our homepage. I'm just excited because the biggest news story of the year, 2 days before Christmas.
Okay.
What? But apparently the Nissan-Honda merger
is a thing.
Is for real.
It's for real.
So, lot to digest here.
Yeah.
If I was hip, I'd say unpack, but I don't want to say that.
That's a very trendy thing to say.
But Honda, the thing about this merger is, here are the hard facts. They will be merged by 2026.
Yes.
And two very big, very storied, very long-lived Japanese car companies will become one.
Yeah.
This does not mean that the Nissan brand is going away or the Honda brand is going away. That is not what's going to happen here.
No.
But they may be consolidated to some extent. We're obviously going to see platform sharing like we see at Stellantis, where
Correct.
A lot of Fiat stuff became Jeep stuff.
Right.
Which was a mistake. But we can go back to...
You know what? We can unpack that later.
We can. Yes, we can unpack that. How you doing?
Yeah, you know what? Like, traffic sucked getting here today.
I was thinking about that. Today is the last...
Yeah.
Work day for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I left at my normal time and literally, like, just as the music was playing, walked in the door.
The company that used to be the master of Consumer Guide Publications International Limited, nice folks, by the way, they just gave us the last 2 weeks of the year off. Go home.
Yeah.
Every year it was nice.
Yeah.
But real quick, this from Automotive News. Honda and Nissan plan to merge under a holding company with the top executives chosen by Honda in a historical reshuffling of Japan's industry meant to keep the country's second and third largest players competitive amid a global onslaught of new competitors and technologies. And then this from Carl Brower.
Okay.
Of IC Cars.
Which we've had him on our show
before.
A couple of times.
Yeah, a respected analyst. A merger between Honda and Nissan will attempt to address the challenges facing many of today's automakers. Rising production costs, electric vehicle development, and China's ever-increasing share of the global automotive market and universal challenges. Okay, I read this wrong. But Nissan is also struggling with increasing debt and reduced sales, while Honda's relatively small size makes it difficult for the brand to compete with larger players like Toyota, Volkswagen, General Motors. If the two companies can effectively share resources, that began with if.
Mm-hmm.
If the two companies can effectively share resources, it will make the new entity the third largest global automaker while providing scale to compete with both long-standing brands as well as the rising threat of China. And this emphasis is mine, but Carl said it. But while automotive mergers always look great on paper, making them work in practice is never easy.
Yeah.
Effective leadership is crucial in the process of identifying each brand's strength and consolidating vehicle platforms and drivetrains while developing a future product plan for the fully utilizes the new partnership. The if is interesting, but we already know that it's going to be run by Honda. I can't think of a better run company.
I would say you're correct.
We keep saying that Honda is small, but I haven't seen Honda hurt by its lack of mass. And Honda did the EV thing with General Motors to save resources, but it's going to go alone, apparently. Well, now it's going with Nissan, and Nissan does have some EV expertise. So this is huge. Just so people know, right now the largest car company in the world is Toyota.
Yes.
10.3 million units a year. That was in 2023. Volkswagen, 9.2. Honda, Nissan would be 7.6 million, roughly.
Right.
Just bigger than Hyundai, Kia. And then Stellantis at 6.4, General Motors at 6.2, and Ford at 4x4. And then Honda alone at 4.2, and Nissan alone at 3.4 million units. It's interesting to me that 4 million cars isn't scale.
I know. I was going to say, my takeaway from that is the Detroit 3 are no longer in the top three.
They're not even the Detroit 3.
Well, they're the Detroit 3-ish.
Yeah, ish. But they're very international at this point.
Yeah.
And the interesting
thing
here... Their
North American headquarters are still in Detroit.
One of the things that's happening here, and we know that Volkswagen's got its own set of problems, but China has become an unpleasant place for outside automakers.
Mm.
So they've become a bit... First of all, the market is shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
People are buying fewer cars in China. And then there's this nationalism that is sort of shrinking interest in imported vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So Volkswagen's having a hard time there, for example. And Porsche just announced that it was reducing its dealership count in China by 30%. So that's China. So, yeah, I guess the consolidation is interesting. I'm glad that this merger will be run by Honda, as Nissan has gotten itself into all sorts of trouble in the last couple
Nissan
of years.
Nissan doesn't seem to, like, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what my takeaways from this. I'm not 100% sure Honda needed this, and I don't know what Honda gets out of this.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that Honda could get out of this, and people argue with me, please feel free.
I will.
I think Nissan actually has really decent electric car technology.
Probably.
And I think Honda is still struggling. And so I think that is one thing that they could get out of it. Because the Aria, have you driven the Aria?
Oh, it's fabulous.
It is a damn nice EV.
It is a consumer guide Best Buy.
Yeah, it is really, really, really good.
So there's that. And I don't know that Honda is struggling with EVs. It just hasn't decided on EVs yet. And it's got EVs out there now that it co-produced. It didn't even co-produce. It kind of licensed from General Motors.
They just badge engineered a...
It's more than that, but not a lot more.
No, it's really not. When a Honda has OnStar...
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I like the Honda better.
I didn't see the imminent threat for Honda.
No, I mean, there's no imminent threat, but I think that there is, you know, some benefit to be had.
One of the interesting things about Honda that you can say about Mazda, but Mazda isn't nearly as successful, is that Honda has very wisely, carefully curated a lineup that isn't large.
No.
And they still sell a midsize sedan that sells in volume, and they still sell a compact sedan that sells in volume. They have two midsize crossovers and two small crossovers. And that's kind of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And Ridgeline.
Yeah.
And all of these are very good.
Ridgeline.
Very well reviewed. I don't know that Honda was actually in trouble unless, to your point, they thought the cost of electrification was going to be too great for them.
I mean... Perhaps. So, and I just want to say, put in a quick plug for the Honda Civic Hybrid, which is a North American Car of the Year finalist.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing. The hybrid powertrain in that car is really good.
So some backroom cloak and dagger. Mm-hmm. Foxconn, the Taiwanese maker of iPhones.
Right.
Was interested in purchasing a stake in Nissan. And they wanted Renault's stake in Nissan. So these are the outstanding issues. Is Foxconn still going to pursue this? And if they did, where would that go? And then Renault still has a stake in Nissan, which means that it will have a stake in the bigger company once it's formed.
Right.
It has a 15% share, I think, right now in Nissan, which means it'll have a 6, 7, or 8% share in whatever the bigger company is.
Right. And I also heard some speculation that the Mitsubishi might be brought into this merger / alliance.
Yeah. I'm trying to care.
Tell me how you really feel.
No, it's just they're such a small player.
They are, but they could really benefit from an alliance, is all I'm saying.
But they haven't benefited yet. I mean, right now, the only thing that they sell in volume is the Outlander, which is, in fact, the Nissan
and
Rogue.
And the Outlander Sport.
Yeah. I said in volume. Thing about that, too, where was I going with Mitsubishi? Mitsubishi could do whatever it wants to. Where Mitsubishi plays in volume that we don't see is like in the Pacific, right? Indonesia, Malaysia, places like that, Vietnam. They have pretty good market share, and they sell pickup trucks and stuff we don't even see here. So Mitsubishi's a weird company, and it plays in places where there isn't enough volume for competition to sneak in.
Right.
But whatever. Biggest story of the year. I'm hoping it doesn't. Here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping it doesn't change the character of Honda.
Okay.
I love Honda.
Okay.
I love the brand. I love the products. I love the way they do business. And the quality's always been great. And you want that to stay the same. It probably will.
Yes.
But. All right. Another story.
Okay.
This would have been our big story.
It would have been.
Were there not a bigger story. Ram pushes back Ram Rev launch.
Yes.
The REV is going to be pushed back, but they are going to full forward the plug-in hybrid Ram Charger.
Yes. I think this is a smart move.
Probably.
I think this is a smart move for a couple of different reasons. One of which is there is not currently a full-size plug-in pickup truck on the market. And this is not a plug-in hybrid. Let's be clear. It's an extended range electric vehicle. But there is nothing like this currently on the market. And it has a range up to about 600 miles, which I think is really going to appeal to truck owners.
What did you say the range was?
I think it's up to 600 miles. Is what
Combined range with
gas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've got EV range on here. I was in a hurry today. So the only note I have on this is 145 miles. So that's the projected EV range.
Yeah.
Extended range electric vehicle, I don't know if we need to get into that, but it is slightly different from a plug-in hybrid functionally.
Yes.
The Chevy Volt with a V, the first Fisker Karma.
Right.
Those were extended range electric vehicles.
Yes.
And basically the gasoline engine never drives the vehicle directly.
Correct. And BMW i3 was also an extended range electric vehicle.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't think it was.
It had a gas generator.
It did, but that just helped you when you ran out of electric power. It didn't power the vehicle.
But no. I mean, that makes it an extended range vehicle. When the generator powers the battery, not the wheels.
But the gas engine, the electric motor. All right, you're probably right.
I'm always.
Let me think about this. Because the gas engine, which was a motorcycle engine from BMW,
mm-hmm.
Was just hung out on the back.
Yeah, it was literally just to power the battery.
And it was brutally rough.
Yeah, I feel like max range with that vehicle was only 200 miles.
I love that vehicle so much. For people who don't remember it, the i3 was a goofy looking, like three-door vehicle.
And I never drove it.
Yeah,
but
the rear door was hinged at the back.
It had like suicide doors, which is a popular term. No.
A delight to drive.
Okay.
And downright hairy in the snow because the back end kept, it was rear drive.
Okay, yeah.
And at the time they were still putting like really high efficiency hard rubber tires on those things.
Oh, yeah.
No grip. It just kept sliding out. Mm. It was either fun or dangerous, but at some point you probably just didn't want to drive it in the cold.
Yes.
Oh, what a day.
Yeah.
So there's something I want to talk about and maybe we'll do this after the quiz.
Okay.
A company called Sunbit.
Okay.
Sunbit. It is a finance company that has started offering to people, mostly at Volkswagen dealerships,
mm-hmm.
The ability to finance their repairs.
Huh.
And I am a very mixed opinion of this.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a mixed opinion about it.
Yeah, it's a little scary, and it does deal directly with the cost of maintaining your car.
Yeah.
And it seems like what they do is kind of legit, but the interest rates are kind of high. I want to talk more about this after the fact, but you drove a car recently.
Yes.
The kind of car we don't see much, even in the test fleet much, but it's a crazy car. You drove the Mercedes-Benz C63S.
Yeah, the Mercedes-AMG C63.
Yes.
S.
Basically, if you have a
E-Performance.
If you have a two-digit number,
yes,
it is an AMG.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's a three-digit number.
But if you're going to tag them on social media, there's actually, you tag Mercedes AMG, not Mercedes Benz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's technically a different, like Mercedes Maybach is also a separate brand.
Yes.
Which is so confusing.
Yes. And so when I get a test vehicle, I typically don't look at the Monroney. I don't want to know how much it costs. I don't want to know. Like, I don't want to know. Like, I want to experience the vehicle before I learn about the vehicle, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so, I get it. It's a plug-in hybrid. And I put it in my garage. I plug it in. And, 8 hours later, I go for a drive. And guess how much range I had? It was 100%.
Uh-huh. So, 100% range on an AMG, 23 miles.
Like 7 miles.
Well, that's silly.
And so I was just like, I went like most the better part of the week, and I was
what
just
is,
like,
I didn't, I don't have this down here. What is the EPA range?
Let's see. I have the Monroney. I didn't look at it, but all I know is the vehicle itself only ever charged up to about 7 miles of electric. And I was just like, what?
There's
what?
No point.
There really was very little point. And I'm looking at this Monroney is confounding to me. So, it gets 21 miles per gallon is the
EPA combined.
And then the 41 MPGe. So if you're just driving on gas, it's 21 miles per gallon. But if you are doing electric and gasoline, it's 40 mpge.
Well, that gets to the heart of what this vehicle is about.
Exactly.
And it's a serious performance vehicle because I'm trying to think of what I just drove that was electric. Oh, the Mercedes, I drove the BMW i5.
Okay.
And I want to say that the mpg rating on that was about 84.
Okay.
So that, and for people who don't know, mpge is an energy equivalent of mpg.
Yes.
And basically 33 kilowatts of energy is 1 gallon of gas. That's the conversion factor here. So what you learn from this is that generally electric vehicles are about 3 times more efficient than gasoline vehicles when you're talking about energy.
Yeah. And as I'm
in the
I'm
abstract,
finally, like dissecting this Monroney, it says all electric range is 0 to 3 miles. And so I'm just like, so at any rate, I thought that was a little bit confounding and I didn't quite understand it until I looked at the horsepower rating, which is 671 horsepower. And then I was like, oh, this is more about like an electric boost creating efficiency overall rather than
671 horsepower from a 2-liter engine.
Yeah.
So let's just go through this lineup real quick.
Okay.
The C-Class. They're compact, very refined, compact sedan.
And it's more like midsize these days, but yeah, compact.
It is bigger, but technically it's compact because the E-Class is their midsize. So the C300 sedan starts around 50 grand, 255 horsepower from a 2-liter turbo. Then there's an all-wheel drive version, which is the C300 4MATIC. And then there's a less crazy AMG version called the AMG C43. Which still extracts more than 400 horsepower from a 2-liter engine, which is insane. And then the Mad Dog you were driving.
Yeah.
Starts at 86K.
Yeah.
Starts at 86K and gets more than almost 700 horsepower from a 2-liter engine. But as you noted, it is hybridized and it is plug-in.
Yeah. And the as-tested price of my vehicle was $92,000. It was $92,840 to be exact.
A lot of money.
That is a lot of money. But I have to tell you, This vehicle made me gleeful.
I want to know who buys this exactly.
Yeah.
Because there are other AMG products that are crossovers.
Yeah.
You know, more based on more popular platforms. So this is insane. And it is also, I think, contrary to where people want to go with something like this, you've got the big number, 671 horsepower. That's cool.
Yeah.
But it is a 2-liter turbocharged engine, so it's not going to be especially refined. And there are, you can buy other AMG products with 6-cylinder engines for not a lot more money that are going to be much smoother. So
this was really damn smooth.
Yeah, well, talk about the driving experience. First of all, Mercedes interior, still gold, I hope.
Yes. No, I mean, it. All the touch points are really good, and it smells like a Mercedes. There is a Mercedes smell.
We need to talk about that one day.
Yeah.
Because if you're in this business and you've been driving lots and lots of brand new cars, a BMW, a GM, a Ford, a Mercedes, a Volkswagen have very specific smells.
They do.
Like if you sat in a blindfolded, you would absolutely know.
You would.
And Mercedes smell good.
They do smell good. It's got to be the leather. I don't know, but it smells good. So really nice touch points. The interior is really well done. And to kind of address who I think would buy this vehicle, I think it's somebody who either has a lot of cars and this is their like commuter car, or it's somebody who doesn't have kids, because this is not a family-friendly kind of vehicle.
No, and the rear seat, like behind me, if I was driving that, no one could fit behind me.
I could fit behind you, but nobody else could.
Doesn't the seat back actually touch the seat bottom?
No, okay. It does not. That's why I'm like, this is more like a mid-sized vehicle these days. So I think it's somebody who likes to drive, doesn't want an SUV, doesn't want a big car, and just enjoys the drive and has a lot of money, clearly, and probably doesn't have kids. How it drives, like, it is crazy good. It is crazy fast. I drove it to Indianapolis. It's also incredibly comfortable. The drive to Indianapolis is 3 hours long. From Chicago. And that makes or breaks my opinion on some vehicles in terms of how I feel about it. Like, Honda vehicles generally get a pretty low rating from me because the seats are just so darn uncomfortable for 3 hours. But these seats were firm but supportive in all the right places. And I've been dealing with a hamstring issue, so this is particularly acute for me right now, and I did not have a problem with this vehicle. So it's very comfortable. It's very fast. It's one of those vehicles that you like go to get on the highway and you think about pushing your foot on the accelerator and it's like, bam, already merging with traffic. I mean, it is good. It is so good.
There you have it, 92K.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this car, and it has all of the modern Mercedes tech to it. I haven't
as it should.
Yeah, well, I haven't pushed out my video yet, but I did essentially like a tech check on this car and looked at the infotainment system, looked at the behind the wheel cluster. One of the things that I really like about new Mercedes vehicles, and I don't know when you the last time you drove a Mercedes was, but
2 years ago it was the EQS.
Okay, so I don't know if you played around with it at all, but the thumb wheels on the steering wheel either adjust the cluster or the home screen. So for all of those people who don't like those like mouse pads, track pads, dials, controllers that are on like the armrest area, or you know, they don't want fingerprints on their screen, you have a way to control your screen without actually touching it.
It is funny that Mercedes and BMW and Audi were the perpetrators of the evil that was the center console rotating control knob, and they've gotten away from it while other manufacturers are still dabbling in it.
Yeah, but I mean, so they don't have the control knob anymore, but they still have the control function, which I really like, and they have the redundant control to be able to touch the screen.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like, you know, it's more of a square screen, and I like how Apple CarPlay fills it out. I like the tech. I like the car. I like how it drives. I think the only complaint somebody who's a true car guy is going to have is the exhaust is, it's a four-cylinder turbo. But it's just like, meh.
Well, if a turbocharged four-cylinder actually makes good noise, it's probably fake.
Yeah.
Because the turbo tends to even out the pulsing. So you shouldn't really have a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And people who drove Porsche 911 turbos back in the day were all like, huh.
And it does have a performance like exhaust. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So there you have it. I would be stunned if they sell 500 of these a year. It just seems like a very specific niche thing.
It's very expensive.
But you say the application, but the execution is good.
It's amazing.
Cool.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
We are talking next segment about Scout.
Yes.
All right. We are joined by Ryan Decker, the head of strategy for Scout. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she's Jill, and this is the last show before Christmas.
It is.
It's a holiday week.
It is.
Also, this is sort of a scam.
Okay.
Everyone else is skipping this week.
Okay.
Which means we have a live show, a new show this week, and people will be like, what am I going to listen to this week? My favorite automotive podcast isn't there.
Yes, it is.
They're going to listen to the Car Stuff Podcast.
Yes.
All right. Throw me a bone here, Jill.
All right. You are on social media.
I am. Thanks for asking.
And I can say media because it is now two.
It is two. Yeah. I am on Twitter X and on Blue Sky.
Okay.
I was so excited to be on Blue Sky.
Okay. Yeah, I can feel that.
Steve King.
Yeah.
Of the Steve and Johnny Show basically chased me onto Blue Sky. Here's the thing about Blue Sky. With very few people there, the conversations are sort of honest and old school. It feels like X from like 10 to 15 years ago.
It does.
Twitter. I'm enjoying it.
Although I will say I've started following more people, which means I've had to start creating lists again. So I had a list, several lists on Twitter for like automotive people, people I like, women who tweet, you know, things like that. And so I just created my first list on Blue Sky for people who tweet about
cars.
Wait,
how did this become about you?
I just wanted to share.
Oh. Because
all right. People should follow me instead of you.
Because I didn't get to the point that mattered. I am Car Guy Tom on X and on Blue Sky.
Got it.
I'm also on Facebook, but I'm not as entertaining. It's more just sort of life stuff.
Okay.
If you want to see pictures of my daughter's birthday.
Okay, yes.
Where she's drinking a lychee martini.
Yeah,
which was very good.
Yeah. Wait, you're entertaining on Twitter and Blue Sky?
Relatively.
Hmm.
So you know this, I think, and I think a lot of people know this, but there is a brand new EV brand on the horizon.
Yes.
Soon.
This is exciting.
It's Scout.
Yes.
And Scout. Scout's parent company is Volkswagen, but it is not a division of Volkswagen. It's an entirely independent company. On the phone to talk to us about Scout is Ryan Decker, head of strategy for Scout. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing very well, both. How are you?
Good.
I don't want to speak for Jill.
I'm doing well.
All right. I'm good, too. Ryan, thank you.
I was hoping we could talk more about the lychee martinis. But Scout works as well.
It was good. I mean, $16. I guess that's normal, but
it is.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious. Ryan, tell us about Scout. What should people know about Scout? And this is coming up quickly.
I think you summarized it well in the intro. Yeah, we've just hit our 2-year-old birthday here. We've come a long way, hiring from the first employee to now approaching 800.
Wow.
But I think more beyond the number of employees is what the team has accomplished. So to go from an idea to a company to a factory that's actively under construction to 2 pretty sweet show cars and, of course, a very advanced vehicle development effort, we've done a lot in the last 2 years.
So why is this happening? What do you guys see as the audience for this vehicle and the potential market?
I think to answer that in 3 chunks there, the why is this happening? So first, I think anyone who knows the Scout brand would know it had to come back. Yeah, it had to get this second chance. An iconic brand, basically the first proper SUV, a beloved brand, beloved products that absolutely had a ton of fans from 1960 to 1980 and still does. And we know many of those fans wanted this brand to come back. From a company perspective, to get into these segments, you have to do it with credibility. You can't go into these pickup trucks and these rugged SUV segments as a poser in terms of the product or in terms of the brand. And so from a business case perspective, we think the Scout kind of pedigree, if you will, unlocks both of those fronts. And now to your final question there, who's it for? Yeah, this is for, no joke, people who want a proper pickup truck or off-roader. So we realize that covers some pretty broad spectrums of people who are actually going to be getting off-road, getting on trails, but also having the 8-day-a-week versatility, as they used to describe the Scout in 1970, to still be a car that works, you know, Monday through Friday as well.
So I just want to dig into your comment a little bit, because you said like a proper SUV or a proper pickup truck. And I just want to ask you what that means exactly.
Yeah, and we summarized that, and I think we could say in one sentence here. We took the best of the old world, the things that made a great American truck a great American truck, and then we combined that with the best of the new world. So to unpack that a little bit, what made an old world truck an old world truck? Things like body on frame, things like a solid rear axle, things like robust suspension, big tires, real physical switches and door handles, kind of a novel thing these days. But we're not taking a truck that got stuck in 1980. We're bringing it thoroughly along into the future. So electric drive units that I heard you guys talking about the previous products there. Unbelievable torque, really fun acceleration, but still with the ability to tow a lot, to carry a lot of payload, to do things like have over-the-air updates. And that's something that we think is still kind of unaddressed in the marketplace, if you will, that sort of combining of the best of the old world with the new world.
Now, you guys showed a pair of concepts, the Terra and the Traveler. And one of the things that I think came out of that reveal was something that's not being talked about much. These are actually not mid-sized vehicles. These are large vehicles. If you could tell us a little bit about the concepts and why you guys chose to go with full-size vehicles.
Yeah, you know, we spent a lot of time debating that. So I'll start with the truck. The truck is 100% a full-size American pickup truck. It has a proper pickup truck bed, 4.5 foot by 5.5 foot. It doesn't have a tweener bed, if you will, because the people who want a truck want all of the versatility and capability that comes with a truck.
Sure.
If you take a close look at our dimensions, the only dimension where we're slightly different than I call it classical full-size pickup truck is the overall length. Mm. And the reason for that is because we really wanted to preserve the off-road character of what made a Scout a Scout. So when it comes to delivering on things like approach angles and departure angles, yeah, we wanted to make sure that our overhangs were as short as we can make them. So synergetically with the truck, we then wanted to build up the SUV. Now, the SUV, we think, is actually very much in a sweet spot in terms of that, yeah, it's a little bit wider than some of the off-roaders out there. It doesn't get mega wide, to be clear. But we think that American buyers are actually going to like that width because it unlocks a little bit more space for passengers, definitely cargo. And bigger than what you would call a traditional Wrangler or Bronco type of product, but not going full crazy big. And to be able to do 2 of those products on the same platform was a very compelling opportunity for us.
Yeah, I love the concepts. I think they're really good looking. And I think I can see just enough of the original Scout in them. And just for the record, I have driven a Scout too. I just want to...
Yeah, awesome.
I'm that old. But a point I wanted to make about these being full size and EV is that you guys are talking about starting prices of about $60,000, which makes them seem shockingly affordable for something I thought was going to go premium. If you could talk about the value point there, and will the prices go up a lot from there? Is this a premium brand? And what can consumers expect from a loaded vehicle?
No, 100%. Yeah, and for us, again, the Scout was not a luxury product. It was not a premium product. So accessibility into the brand, into the products, was something very important to us. On the same hand, we wanted to build up an entirely new company where we were building an all-new factory, an entirely new company, entirely new everything. So we didn't really want to be a small kind of boutique volume brand that had this super unattainable price point. So for us, price point and affordability was very important. And it, by the way, it will be. That wasn't just like a price point we said for the unveiling, and then you can expect it to go up. No, we are going to fight to make sure that we hold that price point.
Now, I mean, that's cool. I'm thinking about like a Chevrolet Tahoe, hard to do for $65,000 with a gasoline engine. So if you guys can do a Scout for $60,000, that's impressive.
And this is where I would say, sort of, if you look at our company value proposition compared to some of the new entrants in the space, we sort of have this really unique combination where on one hand, we're a startup. We started with literally one employee. We can be entrepreneurial. We can be fast. We can be innovative. We can break things, if you will. But on the other hand, we have the backing of one of the world's largest OEMs behind us. So we can get good pricing. We can get good scale. We know how to build a factory at a good price point and to ramp it up efficiently. And I think when you bring those two things together, yeah, that unlocks our ability to hit a very compelling MSRP point for customers.
So you guys are an all-new company, and you've decided to be a little bit controversial sort of out of the chute, and you're going to go with a direct-to-consumer marketing and service program. Tell us about how that's going to work.
Yeah, I won't get into all of the details on that, but what I can say is that I think the point of any company is to sell products and services to a customer, and that's exactly what we want to do at Scout, and directly. And so recognizing that we're building an all-new factory, all-new company, building up, reimagining this all-new brand, we want to make sure that we're giving the appropriate amount of respect and love to the customer experience as well. So for us, it was the only decision and the only way we could deliver upon that was going that way.
So in the shadow of today's huge news, which of course is the Honda-Nissan merger, is the news that you guys are being sued by dealers in California by going direct to consumer. Obviously, this isn't the kind of news you guys want to make, but talk about that controversy. How will consumers respond to not going to a dealership to purchase a vehicle?
Well, again, all I will say about that is, you know, we've seen other brands now go direct to consumer. And
right.
We've seen them do it at scale, and we've seen them do it with very high loyalty and, in fact, some of the highest customer satisfaction. So we know how customers respond to this. We're also not naive. We know there's been some lessons learned in the market about what maybe could have gone better from some of these other examples, and
sure,
we'll pay attention to that, too.
So with the direct-to-consumer agenda, can you talk a little bit about what that means for service? So I think a lot of people, they don't understand what that means. They're very steeped in tradition. They go to a dealership. There's a service department there. You know, they get their car serviced. You know, maybe they'll get a loaner or whatever. But what does that mean in, you know, the direct-to-consumer world? What does service look like?
Yeah, this is one of those things that I mentioned that we're paying attention to it because we've observed perhaps some of the other ones quite get this right. And it's something that we do want to get right and that we're committed to delivering, again, because we really want to ensure that we're giving a proper customer experience. You know, an example here, some of the earliest direct-to-consumer infrastructure that was out there for a while was things that were in like high foot traffic locations. There was stores, you can probably imagine the brand, that were either in shopping malls or were in like downtown centers. And at the time, that was probably the right choice because what they needed was brand awareness. They needed eyeballs. They needed foot traffic. That's now, you know, 10 years behind us. And what customers need is a great way to get the car delivered, to learn about the car, and of course, to get it serviced. So that's our observations of what sort of happened in the marketplace. And now we're planning accordingly to build out a model that works for our customers.
Is there any chance that Volkswagen dealerships will become service points?
No, at this stage, you know, Scout Motors is an independent company that has
Okay. Absolutely
nothing to do with Volkswagen brand. Yeah, I want to be careful there because there's two entities. There's Volkswagen
Sure.
Group, And then there's Volkswagen brand. So right to my, we have nothing to do with Volkswagen brand.
Gotcha. All right, enough of this business stuff. Let's talk about the products themselves and when they're going to launch. So you've got two great looking products. Is that going to be your launch portfolio? And what can you tell us about those in terms of range and price and cool color options? And I know it's way too soon for cool color options.
Oh, no, it's not too soon for that. That's something that was one of our job one things. You know, we got such a kick out of looking at the Scout color palettes. I mean, they had an absurd amount of complexity, but come on, they had so much fun. So we want to make sure that we maintain some of that fun spirit. So way too early for me to get into specifics, of course. We're still figuring it out, but we definitely want the brand to have some joy and some warmth and put a little bit of a smile on your face to it. But yeah, you're right. And what we announced at the unveiling was two products that will be our launch portfolio. The date we said was initial production starting in 2027. To be clear, we're going to fight like crazy to deliver upon that. As you can imagine, when you take a look at our construction updates in Columbia, South Carolina, Blythewood, South Carolina, it's breathtaking the amount of work that's going on down there right now in terms of leveling and putting up steel and, of course, starting to install some of the assembly and body shop process equipment. So full steam ahead down there. So we're going to get that thing built up, and we want to get these cars to customers as soon as we possibly can, because we know from the unveiling that customers are going to love them. So,
yeah, and we haven't made a big deal about it. This, you guys are going to build these in the U.S. You're going to build the batteries in the U.S. And we don't know what incentives are going to look like by then, but they would qualify for any incentives were they to come online again.
Yeah, and that's a big part of our story. You know, for us, the factory is more than a place where you want to build cars. I mean, that factory is going to absolutely transform that community down there in the Midlands of South Carolina. Big time training, of course, prioritizing things like childcare, things like healthcare, things like fitness. So it's way more than just 4,000 jobs. It's literally transforming 4,000 families and 4,000 lives. And that's something that we want to take very seriously as a company. And we're proud of that. Yeah. So it's not just the assembly. Of course, we want to make sure that we're protecting our broader supply chain in terms of finding local suppliers for all the parts that go into the car. But that is a big part of our story. Yeah, we're this reviving this iconic American brand. That means it needs to be manufactured and sourced from America.
Yeah, and Scout is cool. I think you need to be of a certain age to remember Scout fondly. But they were seriously rugged, and they were kind of doing what Jeep was doing in a slightly more commercial way almost. They were very popular with farmer in the ag community, and also great reputation for reliability. So any chance that people will be able to see the concepts around the country? Are you guys hitting any auto shows or placing them in malls?
Mom, we're going to be in Vegas in a few weeks at CES. So
excellent.
Any of your listeners that happen to be at CES, come on down. We would look forward to shaking his or her hand. But that will be the first stop of what will likely be many. Yeah, so probably still a little bit out from, of course, being able to test drive or see these vehicles in stores. But we will likely make the rounds at the various sort of automotive shows and adjacent type of shows, CES being the first.
I'm glad to hear it. Ryan, anything we missed?
I think you covered all the good points. I think you covered all the big.
Well, Ryan, we very much appreciate you joining us this holiday week. We're very excited about Scout, and we wish you all the luck, and we hope we can have you on soon to update us.
I enjoyed the conversation. Happy to come back at any time.
All right. Take care. That was Ryan Decker, the head of strategy for Scout. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
We are back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. This is our special Christmas show.
Yes.
We've done nothing Christmassy.
No.
But you do have a giant pastry in front of you.
I do. I have a very large cinnamon roll, thankfully without icing this week.
That is what, if you were to throw that in the air and take a picture with an old Instamatic camera, that is what a UFO would look like.
That is true.
That old UFO, exactly. And this thing is weird, this bow tie kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of that. I just pointed to it. I asked what it was, and the response didn't come back in English. So
Got
I don't
it.
Know what that is.
It just looks like a glazed donut.
I think it's just a glazed donut, but it's huge.
Yeah.
Huge is good. I mean, that's the selling point for me.
Yeah, I didn't have lunch today, so please excuse me as I'm, chewing with my mouth full and talking.
Donut is good. Mm-hmm. Huge donut is better.
Mm-hmm.
And then huge glazed. You can't really ask for a lot more than that out of a donut.
Cinnamon.
Well, you want cinnamon. You know.
I'm a cinnamon geek.
I hesitate to ask, but you do social media stuff.
I do social media stuff. I do.
All right.
And I have to tell you, I added one this week.
Oh, no.
I know, right?
What's left?
There's a new, this is kind of funny, there's a new social medium out there. It's called Lemon 8.
Lemon?
As in the numeral 8.
Yeah.
And it's owned by ByteDance, which is the same company that owns TikTok. So you have a lot of TikTok people who are making the mad dash over to Lemon 8 because there's concern that TikTok is going to go away on January 19th. It's going all the way up to the Supreme Court, if you haven't heard. And so I did a little video just saying, hey, you know, these are the social media that I'm on. If I, you know, is there anything that I'm missing? And everybody kept saying Lemon 8. So I don't know what to do with Lemon 8 yet. It looks a little bit like a cross between Instagram and Pinterest. So still trying to figure that one out. But yes, I am on social media. I am on pretty much all social media. TikTok, Instagram, Blue Sky, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. I don't know if I missed any, but I'm on all the things. You can find me at Jill Simonello. I use the hashtag Cardajour. But I try to be where people are. So
I don't.
I know you don't. You're a curmudgeon.
I'm a curmudgeon.
You are a curmudgeon.
I work from home.
I actually like people.
I just realized that I'm on Pinterest as well, but I don't do anything there. I haven't even set up a homepage or anything. It's the best way to scan images.
Yeah.
And there's really, really good historic car stuff there.
Okay.
Like old car ads, mm-hmm. some really nicely preserved, well-scanned car ads. So that's pretty cool. But enough of this.
Yes.
Enough of the social media.
Yeah, I like social media. I like to be social.
I am having fun conversations with smart people on Blue Sky. So,
okay.
Oh, by the way, I'm at 250 now.
I'm at like 218, I think.
Yeah, you're catching up.
I am.
But I'm halfway to a free lunch.
Mm.
Someplace very expensive.
Does a free lunch really exist?
We'll find out. I don't know. If I have to hear you talk about social media during that lunch, then it's not free.
Okay.
Running.
Then I will take. Yeah.
Running while doing social media,
which I have done.
Yeah.
I have done. And I am back to running again. So there could be more running talk in the future.
I might rather spend time at Hobby Lobby than.
I like Hobby Lobby. What's wrong with Hobby Lobby?
Oh. I can't think of any place more boring.
Cool things there.
No, there isn't.
For hobbies and lobbies.
There's good candy at the checkout.
Okay.
All right. Today's quiz, are you ready?
I am never
ready. Because we've been running some episodes out of order, mm-hmm. and you have cautioned me not to actually number the quizzes, today's quiz is
X31.
X31? Which means nothing.
I was going to say, does it have anything to do with the theme of the quiz?
No, it does not. Today's quiz is 2 liter, ?
In honor of our Mercedes C63?
Kind of, because the 2 liter turbo is now the base engine in so many cars.
It is.
So I'm going to give you a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
all 2025s, and you have to tell me if that base engine is a 2 liter turbo or not.
Ugh, okay.
It's super simple.
It is not simple.
Simple. Are you ready?
Not simple. Okay, yep.
All right. Ford Explorer. Base engine, 2 liter turbo or not?
Ooh. Why do I think it's a 2.3?
Why do you think that?
I'm going to say no.
It's not. It's a 2.3.
Ooh!
The Explorer is offered to consumers with a 2.3-liter turbocharged 4 or a 3-liter turbocharged V6. And to police officers, still,
mm-hmm.
with a 3.3 gas V6 with a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're on the board. Mm. You have one. Next, the Chevrolet Blazer. That would be Chevy's midsize crossover. Very attractive. Mm. Available in fun colors.
Yeah. You know, I don't think I've ever driven the new Blazer.
It's good.
Okay.
It's good. Cars.com doesn't like it for a bunch of reasons, but none of them are dynamic.
It has Apple CarPlay.
There you go. Is that the first time I've said there you go today?
It is. It's that I recollect.
Yeah.
But we could unpack that later.
How are you doing?
I noticed our friend Ryan used Unpacked. He's hip.
Did he?
He's a hip dude.
He's probably younger than me.
He's probably younger than me.
Probably.
He seemed like a young guy.
Going to need an answer at some point.
Blah, blah, blah. Blazer. And what's ironic is I just wrote a buying guide about this, and I cannot remember what the base engine was.
Oh.
But was it a turbo?
I can answer for you.
I know you can.
But I will answer incorrectly.
Okay. Let me think about this.
5 seconds.
I'm going to say no.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yeah, the base engine is a 2-liter turbo, 228 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
And the available engine is GM's disappearing but super silky 3.6-liter V6.
Mm.
308 big horsepower.
Mm.
Nice engine.
Yeah.
All right, you have 1 point. We didn't talk about the rules. There are 5 questions total,
mm-hmm.
plus a bonus question, today's bonus question. As always, based on the daily theme.
Mm-hmm.
3, Volkswagen Atlas Cross Sport. 2-liter or no 2-liter?
Hmm.
I like that vehicle, by the way.
Mm.
I would own that vehicle.
Yeah, you know what? I like the Crossport better than the 3-row.
Yeah.
Because the 3-row felt a little big, but it was still fun and peppy to drive. But I had problems accessing the 3rd row. That 2nd row seat just moves really
well, if you
tough.
Can't get back there.
Well, and it was just more about moving the 2nd row seat
oh.
to get back there than, like, I could climb over the seats, I'd be totally fine.
Like, the 3 tests are, can I get back there, can you get back there, and can a hamster get back there? And a hamster can.
A hamster can always
get
back there.
You also never get that hamster
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-mm. No, probably not.
People Volkswagen Atlas Crossport, going to need an answer.
I'm going to say no.
Yes.
Mm.
The 2-liter turbo is the only engine.
Interesting.
For 2024 and 2025. 269 big horsepower. Here's the problem. That's a very heavy vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Very big, heavy vehicle. That engine sounds like it's working hard.
Yeah.
It actually delivers plenty of power. The thing's fun to drive, but it sounds like it's working hard. And that annoys some people. All right. You have 1 point.
Mm.
You're in trouble.
I am in trouble.
The 2025 Mini Cooper Countryman 2-liter. Yes or no?
Are you driving that right now?
I am.
I saw it in the parking lot.
Yeah. I have generally love that vehicle. I've got 2 big problems with it.
Okay. Does anything have to do with the engine?
No. No, the engine gets it done.
I'm going to say...
You can hear the engine, though. Dang.
I haven't driven a Countryman ever, I don't think, actually.
Oh. Very interesting vehicle because it's not in any way mini.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very practical and fun to drive.
I'm going to say no.
Yes.
Ugh.
2-liter. Right now, a 2-liter turbo is the only engine in it.
Mm.
241 horsepower in the S and 312 in the JCW.
Mm-hmm.
John Cooper works. That's what I'm driving. My problems are my phone will not stay connected, and it's really bugging me.
Mm. We've already established that's a you problem.
I don't think it is because I don't have that problem in every car. And the other problem is that the steering, which is generally very sporty,
mm-hmm.
sometimes betrays itself with a weird bit of overboost. And it's like, oh, this is electric steering. And all steering's electric now. I know that.
Mm.
But, all right, you need this one.
Yeah, I'm not hopeful.
The Mitsubishi Outlander.
Hmm. Speaking of Mitsubishi.
Hmm. Which may play some very minor role in the Honda-Nissan thing.
Well, I'm trying to think because it shares a lot of things with the Nissan Rogue, and
yep.
I'm trying to remember if it shares a powertrain, because the Rogue has, like, I want to say, like, a 3-cylinder engine,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it's a 2.0 liter.
It's a surprisingly good 3-cylinder
uh-huh.
engine.
It is surprisingly
It's a big
good.
Engine, a 1.5-liter 3-cylinder turbocharged engine that gets excellent mileage for the class.
Yeah. I'm just going to go with my no theme. No.
No.
Ah!
It's a 2.5-liter 4-cylinder engine, which is the old Rogue engine. So this never got moved because I think Nissan went to this engine 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
With no announcement.
Mm-mm.
Like, we had made the car, I could see a guy, we had made the Rogue a Best Buy
mm-hmm.
and we didn't know that they went to a new engine. Turns out the engine's just fine. All right, so you have 2 points. You need the bonus question.
I need the bonus. All right.
Okay, as we talked about earlier, Christmas in Poland.
Yes.
All right. According to the website culture.pl,
mm-hmm.
There are 12 things that are part, or 10 things? I'm not going to count these now. There are a bunch of things that are always part of a Polish Christmas dinner.
Mm.
You have to tell me which of the following is not.
Okay.
According to culture.pl, which is a very nice website. Great photography.
Okay.
Translated to English. It's a nice site. So if you want to check out Polish stuff, culture.pl. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Something called botched, which is red borscht, Christmas Eve carp, cabbage rolls, Christmas Eve trout. One of those is not part of a traditional Polish dinner, Christmas dinner.
Isn't trout like an American thing?
Borscht, carp, cabbage rolls, trout.
I mean, borscht and cabbage rolls definitely sound like...
Sure do.
Polish.
They sound Polski.
Yeah. If you'd put pierogi on there, I definitely would have said yes. That's one of the things.
You know, pierogi's not on the bigger list either.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So...
You know where we used to, speaking of Polish things,
mm-hmm.
where WCPT is there mm-hmm. in Milwaukee? That used to be a huge area for used car dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
And in every window, you'd see a sign that said, Moimi po Polsku. We speak Polish.
Okay.
I don't speak Polish.
No.
Yeah.
Neither do I. Okay. So I'm down to carp and trout.
All right. Which is a cop show. It could be. Doesn't it sound like a buddy show?
No. It does not sound like a buddy show.
Officer Carp and Detective Trout fighting crime?
No.
In Palatine?
It could be like...
That'd be a terrible show.
Dog names, Carp and Trout.
All right, I need like 3 minutes at the end of the show, so you're going to have to give me an answer.
I feel like trout is very American, so I'm going to go with that.
Trout is, in fact, the correct answer. It's not part of the dinner. Nice job. So the dinner included borscht, carp, cabbage rolls, gingerbread, mushroom soup, Jewish-style carp, which looks like gefilte fish, herring, dumplings, braised sauerkraut, kutia, or kusha maybe, which is a poppy seed dessert that looks like oatmeal, gingerbread, dried fruit compote, and poppy seed cake. There you have it. I don't know how to say Merry Christmas in Polish, but I should have. But I wanted to talk about this sunbit thing real quick.
Okay.
So this is the least Christmassy thing in the world. I heard this on Automotive News, their Daily Drive podcast. But there's a company called Sunbit that is now offering at some Volkswagen dealerships financing for your repairs.
Mm.
And this bothers me for a lot of reasons because this means repairs have gotten so expensive that people are kind of deciding not to do them. So this is what I learned. The typical repair order at a dealership is now $400.
Mm.
The typical amount financed through Sunbit is $800. Ugh. So about a big order. And the guy from Sunbit who was being interviewed, $800 is now about the standard price for a set of four tires. So here's the deal. They're not ripping people off, but they are charging credit card rates for this.
Mm.
And you can finance your purchase for 3, 6, or 12 months.
Mm.
So if you finance $800 for 6 months, they want you to make your first payment right there at the dealership. So you're paying for part of this.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically adding $100 to the cost of your repair. So $800 becomes $900. Yeah, it's a little rough. It's rough. And their interest rates are 20% credit card rates to 35%. I calculated that $100 at 20%, but it could be as much as $175 or so, which seems like a lot.
Yeah. And so from a Volkswagen owner who is currently looking for a new car because our repairs to our current car are going to be more than $1,500. And we have like a 2016 model and we're just kind of like, it's probably not worth it at this point because there are some other things that also need to be done. Why would you finance the repairs instead of just, I mean, I know car payment, but like we're going to go get a new car.
I don't know. Well, first of all, you know what? People end up in a bind.
Mm.
I'm running out of time here, I realize, but you need to get your car repaired. You have two cars and you've got two people who work and kids and you got to get them places. And sometimes having a car out of service for a week is tough. And it is easier to get your car repaired, whether or not that makes financial sense, than to go through the hassle and the effort of buying a new car. Though dealerships are very good about trying to keep you in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you thought about getting a new car? I mean, they will.
Yeah.
They will steer you in that direction. Anyway, we could talk more about this. I wouldn't mind getting someone from Sunbit on the show to talk about this. But I think it is helpful on one level and alarming on another.
Yeah.
I wish that, because people should also have credit cards. So they could do this themselves, which means that they're fully tapped out and they need
an additional line of credit in order to take care of their repairs. And that, to me, seems very predatory.
Right.
Yes.
The whole thing's a little scary to me. All right. That's a show.
All right.
I want to say some thanks here for the end of the year. Thanks to producer Randy, who always makes us sound good. Big thanks to Sam Fiorani, who is always super flexible with his schedule and super well-informed. He makes us sound smart. And big thanks to the Sons of Speed guys. We haven't had them on in a few weeks, but they've been awesome about jumping into the co-hosting chair, and they're great to talk to.
Yes.
Those are good guys. All right. You got any Christmas plans?
I'm driving down to Indianapolis.
All right. I'm sticking close to home.
Yep.
All right. That is a show.
All right.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.